You know, that song really captures the heartbeat of what I think the next generation longs for from us. You know, this tension of, you know, hey, we're ready, and yet we're problems to be solved. We're children to be loved. And one of the questions that we have to ask is, how do we empower the next generation to greatness? Well, one of the ways we do that is we have to understand ourselves. What does it look like in our lives to be winning, not losing, and how do we define that? So excited that you're here today as we begin this new series. My name's Kurt, by the way, if we haven't had a chance to meet. And I want to start by telling you a story that really kind of captured for me the tension that I live in every day and that I think captures the high achiever culture that we live in. A couple weeks ago, our family ran in a 5K race called the Durbin Classic out at one of our schools here in the community, and they have 5K, 10K. And we were running, and last year at this race, I won my age division, which isn't a lot to be said. I'm not bragging by that, by the way. It's way, way before. Don't get too excited. I think there were four of us in the 40, mid-40-somethings age division. I don't know that anybody else was working out. I happened to be working out and training. So anyway, I didn't go into it expecting to win this year, but I did want to set a personal best. And so, you know, we're off and running. I'm running with one of my kids for part of the race, and my one is way in front of me. I'm just trying to keep visual eyesight so I can, like, use him as a rabbit. And I'm about halfway through the race, and I hear these light footsteps behind me. And all of a sudden, this guy passes me, and we've kind of stretched out by this point. And he goes by, and I'm like, man, he looks like a runner. Because I don't really look like a runner. He runs like a runner. He is built like a runner. And so in my mind, I'm like, man, if I can pace with him, I'm going to probably set a personal best. And I'm going to use him to kind of push myself. So I did that for the next mile or so. And when we got to the last half mile of the race, that's about where I usually start picking up the pace, pushing to the finish. So I start pushing, and he's about 10 yards in front of me. I start gaining on him. And before long, I'm passing him, and I'm feeling like all accomplished, and I get to like the last, you know, 400 yards, and I go into my sprint at that point in a race, and I get to the end, and I hit my watch, and it was my personal best for that year. I felt all accomplished, and I was feeling really good about myself. Then I thought, well, I wonder what happened to him. So I look back, and he's just crossing the finish line, and then he just keeps on running past me, and I realize he's running the 10K, not the 5K. And so as good as I felt about what I had done, all of a sudden I felt lousy. I'm like, oh my gosh, he didn't even know I was competing against him yet, and yet I'm feeling bad because he's got five kilometers left to go, and here I'm feeling all good. And then I felt terrible, and I thought, this captures the high achiever culture we live in. That it's not enough to feel good about where we are, but we're always paying attention to what everybody else is doing. And so this morning, I want to kind of help us capture that, you know, there's always going to be somebody that's faster. There's always going to be somebody smarter. There's always going to be somebody prettier. There's always going to be somebody skinnier, more talented, or I mean, whatever, you name it. There's always going to be somebody that has more all right? More like at the end of whatever that descriptor is. And this will never go away. It's always going to be a part of our culture. And then there's others of us that having being faster, smarter, you know, thinner, you know, is not our thing. Our thing is est. Like, we want to be smart-est. We want to be happy-est. We want to be skinny-est. We want to be the most retweeted-est, you know, or whatever. I mean, we have to be the best. And the thing I want us to see today as we begin this series is there is no win when we begin to compare ourselves to someone else. When we begin to focus on somebody else's lane instead of the race God has called us to run, we lose out. There's never a win in this. In fact, comparison, think about this, comparison puts the dis in the word discontentment, all right? And you know this because you have stories about this, all right? But discontentment fueled by comparison is very, very dangerous. It's very dangerous. And so as we begin this series this morning, I want to kind of lay a foundation for us today, and here's why. Because, you know, some of you, you've learned this. You're in consumer debt because you spent too much time looking at what somebody else had, looking at someone else, what someone else was wearing, looking at what someone else was driving, looking at, you know, what someone else was living in. I mean, you spent time looking at their house and just thinking, man, my house isn't like their house. And you go home to your house, and you're like, my word, honey, the ceilings just seem to be caving in on me. They're so low. I need like 12-foot ceilings. And so you go and take like a whole nother mortgage because, you know, you spent so much time looking at what somebody else had. And unfortunately, as we've probably all discovered, what happens when we stare too long at somebody else's stuff and try to run in somebody else's lane is it's dangerous. It's relationally dangerous. It's emotionally dangerous. It's physically dangerous. I mean, some of us right now, we're dieting ourselves to death. I mean, we may be working ourselves to death. We may be, you know, working out ourselves to death. We may be studying ourselves to death. And you begin to find that you can't get along with certain people because you look at them and they remind you of everything you don't have and everything you don't live in and everything you're not married to and everything that you're not driving, and maybe they got your job or they got into the program that you wanted to get into, and it's just miserable because you just are so focused on everybody else. And the temptation doesn't ever go away. And so don't hear me say I'm going to give you like some silver bullet that's just going to, you know, fix it once and for all. I mean, we're in church, for God's sake. I mean, we want you to feel the weight and the guilt of everything we're talking about this morning. Then we're going to sing a song and send you home. And you're going to be like, well, honey, I didn't learn anything, but my word, I guess we're all in the same boat. We're actually not going to do that. We don't do that at Crosspoint. We don't shame you. We actually want to give you tools. And so this morning, I want to give us a way forward on how do we navigate this high achiever culture that we're in. And I struggle with this. I, like many of us, I mean, I'm driven. I'm a high achiever. I live my life on my laptop, on my thumbs, through my phone. And this stuff doesn't go away. Every time I open up a browser, it reminds me of what I don't have. In fact, this past week, we had two cars in the shop for repairs for about 3 different days. And so we rented a car for the week. We decided there's no way our family of six can make it through a week on one car. So I rented a full-size car for like $100. It was really cheap, and it was a good investment for the week as we had our cars in. And when I got there to pick it up, the agent said to me, she said, well, Mr. Walters, which I hate when I get referred to that way, Mr. Walters, she said, we've got an upgrade for you. I'm like, oh, okay. So we walk out, she gives me an Audi A6. And I'm like, oh, wow, I didn't pay for an Audi A6, but it's pretty cool. And I didn't even know how to use it. Like every time I'd come to a stop, I'd press on the brake and the car'd shut off. I'd shove it into park. I'm like, dang thing, I have to restart it. And then I realized it's like an economical thing. Like you brake and stop and it shuts off. And as soon as you left the brake, it goes again. I don't have that technology in my car. So it took me 3 days to figure that out. But, which, by the way, if you saw me driving a silver Audi A6 this week and you thought, wow, dream big must have gone really good. Kurt's got a brand new car. It did go really well, by the way. You guys rock dream big, but that has nothing to do with my salary, all right? It was a rental. It was a rental. I'm back to my family car this week. But my son, he loved this car, so he starts Googling how much we could buy one for. He's like, Dad, he's 15. He's going to start driving, so we need to get one of these. I'm like, dude, it's not practical for our family. The next day, you know what? Ads showed up in every one of the browsers we opened up on our phones and on our laptops. Hey, you can buy an Audi A6 here and there. I mean, you can't get away from this. Everything, it reminds us of how much we don't have and what we don't have and how skinny we are. How much, there's not enough shiplap in the world. You better go buy it right now. I mean, we're always reminded of what we don't have. It's just everywhere. And so this isn't going away. And the point is not that culture is bad. All right, don't hear me say that. I love culture. We shape culture. All right, the point is not let's abandon society and become a hermit and just disconnect from everything. That's not the point. What I want us to see is that we can actually navigate this, and there's certain things we can do that allow us to actually, you know, be very successful and have a peaceful life in the midst of the high achiever culture. And so what was kind of interesting for me this week as I was preparing is I had a few really like cool devotional moments as I was on a couple runs this week reflecting, and I thought, man, this is coming at a really good time for me. It just wasn't that I was preparing to share, but it's like God was reminding me, Kurt, you need to revisit this yourself because I struggle with this. So I'm excited, and I'm not like a high schooler or even a young adult anymore. This is something we deal with our whole life. And so, again, this isn't a problem to be solved as much as it is a tension that we have to learn to manage so that we can thrive, not just survive, in the midst of the high achievement culture all around us. And especially if you're a Christian. And now if you're not a Christian or you're still kind of trying to figure out if you're a Christian or what you believe about Jesus, man, we're so excited you're here. And there's going to be things you're going to be able to walk away with and go, wow, if I implement this, my life's going to be better. But if you're a follower of Jesus, if you're a Christian, this has huge implications for you because this intersects with your relationship with your Heavenly Father who has called you by name. Think about this for a moment. This is so powerful, and I don't really have time to walk it out, but your Heavenly Father who has called you by name according to His purposes. Think about that for a moment. Wow, like God actually has a plan and a purpose for your life. And what if we actually miss it because we're so focused on running in someone else's lane? So, for the rest of our time this morning, I want to look at a guy by the name of Solomon. And I want to give you a line of defense this morning as you begin to think about how do I navigate this high achievement culture. Something you can go to mentally, a line that you can kind of begin to remind yourself with when you begin to drift into somebody else's lane, because it happens all the time. And so we're going to give you a couple phrases today. And this is something you can tell yourself inside your heart and your mind, kind of remind yourself, kind of keep yourself between the guardrails. And so Solomon, he's the wisest guy that ever lived. We find him in the Old Testament. He's a guy who's been there, done that, lived that, driven that. I mean, he had everything. He's a king. He has unlimited resources at his disposal. And so he basically downloads some of his life experience into a couple books in the Old Testament. One is Ecclesiastes. And he just says, hey, you can learn from some of my experiences. And so part of the allure of the high achiever culture is if only I had X, or if only I was driving this, or if only I looked like or married this, or whatever it is. And Solomon, he's like, hey, I've been there. I've drove it. I've done it. I've married it. I've owned it. I've sold it. And he's like, let me just tell you everything I've learned through my years, because I've been there and I've done that. And so here's what he says in Ecclesiastes 4, and this is kind of him reflecting on his life at this point. He says, and I saw, meaning, you know, as I think back in the past, it was something I saw, and I saw that all the toil, all the work, all the getting after it, all the achievement, you know, for all you goal setters out there, he says, I saw all the toil and all the achievement spring from one person's, get this word right here, envy of another. To which we go, what? And he goes, yeah, I've seen it. I've been there. I've done that. This is what's happening. It's been happening for over 3,000 years. There's nothing new happening right now. In other words, he's like, I looked around and all I saw was everybody was competing. Everybody was determining. And this is a little embarrassing when you think about it, but it's true. It's happening 3,000 years ago. It's still happening today. Everybody's determining where they are based on where everybody else is. And when I saw that, I'm like, oh my gosh, it makes me feel a little better about the fact of that I continue to do this. I guess it's been going on for a long time. And then he goes on. He says, this too is meaningless. And then he gives us our phrase right here. He gives us this phrase that I want us to hone in this morning on. And I want us to memorize this phrase this morning. I'm going to walk us through it in a moment, because this is like mental language. This is, you know what mental language is? Mental language is something you say to yourself, like under your breath or quietly, but you don't really say it out loud for somebody else to hear. That's mental language, all right? Which, in case you don't know, there are certain things that you should say only for yourself that other people should never hear, all right? This is like a freebie I'm going to give you. Like, for instance, honesty. Honesty is not saying everything that's true. You do that, you're going to have no friends. All right? It's not saying everything that's true. We're going to get into the socio-emotional side of how do we cultivate healthy relationships next weekend. So I hope you'll be back for that. Honesty is not saying everything that's true. That's foolish. Honesty is making sure what you say is true. All right? So just a little difference there. Anyway, Solomon, he gives us this phrase that we need to take as mental language, something you just say to yourself. You might need to say it out loud just for yourself to hear. And so here's the whole phrase that he says here, and then I'll give you the thing we're going to try to memorize. He says, and I saw the toil and all the achievement springing from one person's envy of another. This too is meaningless, and here's our phrase, a chasing after the wind. He says, it's a chasing after the wind. It's endless. It's pointless. You never know when you win. There's no trophy at the win that said, hey, you made it. And it only leads to dissatisfaction. Dissatisfaction guaranteed, because you never get there. And he says it steals joy. And here's the tragedy of it all. See, comparison, it actually steals the joy of the things we accomplish, because there's somebody that always has a little more It's a little smarter, a little faster, a little skinnier. And see, I want us to remember, there's nothing wrong with high achieving. There's nothing wrong with cultivating and raising high achieving kids, being all that they can be. There's nothing wrong with, you know, developing a high achieving team in the workplace or a sports team or whatever it is. The question we have to get to is, what's driving it? What's the drive behind the motivation? Because see, comparison, it steals the joy that we have, because there's always going to be somebody that's accomplished more. There's always going to be somebody that has more And so when you catch yourself this week, in fact, you're going to catch yourself before you even leave Crosspoint today. You're going to walk out of here and you're going to see somebody and you're going to be like, man, I wish I had hair like that. Or I just wish I had hair. Or I wish I had that waist. or I'll never look as good as she does in that. Whenever you catch yourself in that place, getting into somebody else's lane, I want you to use this line right here. I want you to just go, that's just chasing the wind. Right, that's just chasing the wind. Whenever you see somebody else that has more and you're like, well, gosh, I felt really good until I saw them, I want you to go, but that's just chasing the wind. Or when you're scrolling and you bring a browser up and it reminds you of everything you don't have, or so-and-so's, you know, on vacation and here you are stuck in rainy Indiana and you're feeling like your life was good until you saw that, just go, but that's just chasing the wind. And I don't chase the wind. All right, so I want us to say these out loud together so we can kind of get used to it. And then you're going to say these like under your breath, all right? Let's say the first one together here on the count of three. One, two, three. That's just chasing the wind, all right? One more time. That's just chasing the wind. And then the second one, here we go. And I don't chase the wind. Now, I want you to say it like you mean it. And I don't chase the wind. Now, you don't, do you? I mean, come on. Like you seriously, like you don't want to spend the rest of your life chasing the wind, right? I mean, this isn't even a Christian thing or a religious thing. This is like an everybody thing. Because there's no win in chasing the wind. There's no trophy. There's no finish line. I mean, there's no, like, I did it. I got there. And everybody's like, what'd you do? And you're like, I don't know. I just did it. Because, see, you were following somebody else's lane. You didn't even know what your thing was. Because there's always going to be somebody that has more-er. That's cuter, happier, skinnier, healthier. And see, I don't know you personally, but see, here's what I know about every single one of us this morning. Your life is too valuable, and your life is too short, and your time is too valuable for you to spend any time wasted chasing the wind. And so the moment this week when you begin to feel those emotions rise up and you feel a little less because of what somebody else did or has, or that moment when you feel some sense of inadequacy, or you feel like you're not successful enough, or you didn't measure up to your parents' expectations on something, you know, then you just go, that's just chasing the wind, and I don't chase the wind. Now, fortunately for Solomon, he's not done, all right? He realized there's a flip to this, all right? So Solomon, he'd be like, okay, but here's the thing. Not chasing the wind is not like an invitation to be passive, all right? It's not an invitation to just sit around and not do anything. He's like, look at me. I've accomplished more in my life than you will in 10 lifetimes. And Solomon's not bragging when he says stuff like that. He just has, all right? He was incredibly successful. And so he's like, don't think for a minute I'm not telling you to not be a high achiever, to accomplish your best and be the best. He's like, have you seen my temple? have you looked at my gardens? He's like, I have 300 wives and 600 concubines. I'm a bit busy. All right, he's like, have you seen my gold? My word, I have more gold than Fort Knox. So Solomon is not advocating just kind of wasting your potential. He's not saying that at all. In fact, verse 5, he says, fools fold their hands and ruin themselves. He says, fools, they say, you know what, I can't keep up. I mean, I apparently I didn't come from the right bloodline, or I'm not as talented as somebody else, and everybody else got a better family than me, and so I guess I'm not even going to try. He's like, don't do that. That's foolish. That won't get you anywhere. But then he brings these two ideas, these kind of two opposite end of the spectrum ideas together into one statement, and here's what he says next in verse 6. He says, but better one handful with tranquility than two handfuls with toil and chasing after the wind. Now think about the imagery of what he's saying right here. He says, better to have one handful, all right, with tranquility. Now he's saying you need to learn to be content with what you have. And then this kind of rubs against the grain of everything we're about here in our community, right? Because we don't just want one handful or two handfuls. If I had four hands, I want four handfuls. I want like 10 handfuls. I want way more than I can hold. Because our culture is all about more. And so Solomon, he's like, I have more than all of you. Shut up and listen to me. I've been there. I've done that. I'm trying to help you understand something without going down the same path I've been down. He says, better is one handful with tranquility than two handfuls with toil and chasing after the wind. What's tranquility? Tranquility is satisfaction. Tranquility is where you drive home at night and you walk into your house and you just take an exhale. And you go, I'm good, this is good, I'm happy with what I have. Tranquility is when you hear that your younger brother got into grad school, and you're like, who knew? I didn't even smart enough to get into grad school, but he got into grad school. Not only get into grad school, he got into the program you always wanted to be in. Tranquility is where you can go, dude, man, I'm so excited you got into grad school. Way to go. I'm really happy for you. That's tranquility. Better is one handful of tranquility than the toil of competing and, oh, I have to be better. And maybe years ago you would have been like, yeah, that would have really bothered me, but better is one handful with tranquility than two handfuls of gritting and competing and pushing and striving. And then he goes on. He's like, let me tell you something else. Verse 7, he says, again, I saw something meaningless under the sun. And you're like, okay, Solomon, what is it? Because he's like got our attention now, right? He says, there was a man all alone. He had neither son nor brother. And we're like, okay, what does that have to do with? Well, so he's thinking through, what am I going to do? I work my tail off every day. I don't have a son. I don't have a brother. In that particular culture, he could not leave his inheritance or everything he had, his estate, to anybody but a son or a brother. And so he's like, I have nobody to leave it to. So he says, there was no end to his toil. In other words, I was getting after it. I was working day and night. And yet his eyes were not content with his wealth. So he's working hard, he's getting more, and you know, more leads to more and bigger leads to bigger. He's just getting after it, and he stops and he asks this really, really important question. And if we're not careful, we'll just blow right past this question. So I'm gonna help us kind of dive into this question for a moment. And it's a question I wish I would have asked much earlier in my life. And let me just tell you before we look at this question won't keep you from being a high achiever. This question will actually allow you to be a high achiever with peace and with some sense of tranquility in your life, where you're not just surviving, but you're actually able to thrive. So here's the question most of us forget to ask. He asked the question, for whom am I toiling? For whom am I toiling? Who am I doing this for? What am I trying to prove, and to whom am I trying to prove it? Now this is a hard question, and if I can be honest, I had to wrestle this thing to the ground a number of years ago, and I'm still wrestling it to the ground. As much as you wrestled to the ground once, it's an ongoing battle. All right, and for those of you who are students in the room, let me just tell you, the sooner you get to the answer to this question, the more peaceful your life is going to be, the more satisfaction you're going to have in life, the better your marriage is going to be, the better your career is going to be. And so whether or not you know the answer to this question or not, for whom am I toiling, there is an answer. For whom are you striving? For whom are you pushing for? For whom are you gritting your teeth and just continuing to get after stuff on? And for some of you, you know who it is? It's your brother. That's who you're doing all this for. You're trying to compete with your brother. You're trying to compete with your sister. Some of you, you're still trying to live up to your mother's expectations. And if you're doing that, let me tell you something. You're not going to win, in case you haven't figured that out. And you're like, well, how do you know? Because if you could have won, you would have already. All right, so you're not going to win. For others of you, it's your father. For whom am I toiling? You're still trying to get that hug from your dad. Still trying to get that smile, that blessing. And for some of you, your dad is not even alive anymore. You're just chasing the wind. And so, this is a very, very powerful question. For whom am I toiling? Why am I doing this? Who am I trying to prove something to? And some of you might be going, well, I'm just doing it for me. Really? Probably not. No, I'm just doing it for me. Okay, well, maybe, but you still need to wrestle this question to the ground. Because see, until you answer this question, you're not going to be free to be content with one handful and tranquility instead of two handfuls. And then Solomon, he says one last thing here, which is really fascinating. He goes on, he says, and why am I depriving myself of enjoyment? He's like, this guy accomplished so much. He's like, he worked, and yet who's he going to leave it to? There's nobody to leave it to. I mean, he busts his tail day in, day out, and yet he's not even able to enjoy the fruit of his labors because he's always busy going after the next thing. Why am I even doing this to begin with, he says. And perhaps for some of us here this morning, you're not enjoying your life either. And let me tell you something. If you're not enjoying your life, the people in your life are not enjoying you. Meaning, if you're a parent, if you have kids in your home and you're not enjoying your life and the fruit of your labor, your kids probably aren't enjoying you. And if you lead people or you manage people and you're not enjoying, for the most part, what you do, people that you lead probably aren't enjoying you. And this one gets a little more personal. I mean, if you just have relationship after relationship that keeps ending the same way, I mean, you're dating and yet it always kind of ends the same. And you're not really enjoying your life. The people you're dating probably aren't enjoying you either. I mean, your friends, if you're not enjoying life, they're probably feeling the angst. They may have even tried to talk to you about it. They may be like, dude, you gotta like let, you know, just let down a little bit. And you're like, I'm ambitious. That's how I'm wired. I've been there, I've done that. And if that's not enough, here's one more piece of motivation. Realize there's probably plus or minus a half a billion people in the world, which would be like 500 million people in the world that would look at your life and where you live right here in this community and what you drive and the family you have and the job you have and the home you live in and even that you get to be in this place right here, and they would look at you and they would think you're the luckiest person on the planet. But you don't. Because you're paying attention to what everybody else is doing instead of what God has brought into your life. See, if we can't answer that question, for whom am I toiling? We're always going to be in that, we're never going to be satisfied. And here's the thing, you'll never be who you were born to be. As long as you're looking to your left and you're looking to your right over your shoulder at anybody else. See, God has given you uniquely a race to run. He's called you according to his purposes. And sure, look to your left and right for inspiration. Look at other people and be inspired. Look to your left and right and celebrate what other people are doing. But don't look at them for imitation. Don't look and say, oh, I just need to get in their lane. Jordan Peterson, he wrote a great little book. I just finished a book study on it called 12 Rules for Life. He talks about comparison. He says, you know, if you just struggle with comparison, you need to compare yourself to others. Here's what he said. This is something you can write down and take home. He says, compare yourself to who you were yesterday, not to who somebody else is today. So, which he's basically saying, if you just need to compare yourself, then compare yourself to who you were yesterday. Am I a little better today than I was yesterday? Instead of who anybody else is today. Parents, this is imperative. I mean, if you've got kids at home, you've got to figure this out because your kids are depending on this. They need you to build this into their lives. We've got to prepare the next generation. Leaders, if you are leading someone in work or at home or wherever it is in our community, you've got to figure this out. The next generation is depending on you to help show them what it means for you to be all you can be and not worry about everybody else's lanes. You know, coaches, if you coach something, I mean, when I coach things, I have to ask that question. Why am I toiling in this? Why am I doing this? Because I've got a whole field of students that are like sponges. I've got a whole quarter of kids that are like sponges. And they need somebody to show them why we do these things. Am I doing it so I can feel better about my life or live some past dream out? Or am I just trying to help them be the best that they can be? And students, again, if you're a student, high school student, college student, junior high student, let me tell you, the sooner you get to the bottom of this question, for whom am I toiling? For whom am I living my life for? I tell you what, the more peace you're going to have and the better your life is going to be. Because you're never going to be who God created you to be as long as you're looking to your left and your right at anybody else. And I'll tell you something, I've done it the right way and I've certainly done it the wrong way. And I wish I would have figured this out sooner. All right, so I want to give you a couple next steps this morning on what do we do with this? So this phrase, the first one, if you want to take out your connection cards, this phrase is going to be really, really important this week as we begin to lay a foundation for this and run in our own lane. All right, the first one is, first next step is when my emotions begin to get the best of me this week, when I begin to drift into somebody else's lane, when I begin to go, oh my gosh, I wish I was more like them, or I'll never be that, and you begin to feel bad about yourself, I want you to just say, ah, that's chasing the wind. I need to run in my own lane because I don't chase the wind. If you want to say, okay, I'm going to use that this week. You may need to use it before you leave Crosspoint. Just declare that. Say, hey, I'm going to use this phrase. I'm going to type it in my phone. I'm going to make it the backdrop of my screensaver, whatever you need to do to remind yourself because Solomon gives us something to combat drifting. All right, next step on here. Maybe Jesus has just been building into you over the last few weeks. I mean, maybe you recently became a follower or became a Christian, received his grace. Maybe God's just been doing some things in your life and you've never been baptized. Baptism is a huge identity piece in your faith. We have baptism services in a couple weekends. Maybe you want to be a part of that and just kind of publicly declare, hey, I'm with God. He's chosen me. He has a plan for me. And that's what baptism is. I'm with God and he's with me. Another step on here is the power of community. If you're not in a group, our groups just launched last weekend for the spring session. You can get in a group, you can go online. Starting Point, if you're newer to faith, great, great class, 8-week class on just some of the core things, getting some of the core questions answered of what it means to know God and follow God. So maybe you want to join that. And then maybe for you, it's just return to next weekend. Maybe it's coming back for week 2 of this series, or maybe even taking a step of faith today. which you certainly can do. As you figure out your next step, I want to close and just tell you a brief little story. Before I do that, let me tell you, you know, some of you may not know this. I come from a lineage of pastors, pretty successful pastors. My dad was a pastor, startup pastor, doing what I did. My grandfather was a startup pastor. In fact, in our network of churches, some people would consider our family kind of influential, very influential in the church network we're a part of. In fact, just this past week, one of our other pastors, Chris, he said, hey, I just met recently a guy by the name of John with the same last name you have. Are you related to him? I'm like, oh yeah, it's my uncle. And he said, oh gosh, you guys are really entrenched in this whole network of churches. I said, we are. And so here's the crazy thing. I didn't plan to be a pastor. I wasn't planning to follow in my father's footsteps, my grandfather's footsteps. It wasn't my plan until God tapped me on the shoulder and said, hey, here's what I want you to do. And so I had to figure this out for myself. And so I wish I would have asked these questions sooner. And I want to tell you a story about somebody else who had to learn this in a similar way. And you've probably heard of this guy, at least by name. Maybe some of you haven't heard of him. His name's Joel Osteen. Anybody heard of Joel Osteen? Yeah, most of us, many of us. Joel's also a pastor. I really connect with his story. And maybe it's because he's a pastor and I'm a pastor. His dad was a pastor. My dad was a pastor. I've never met him. I don't watch him. I've listened to him only a handful of times. But I've read his story a couple times, and then I recently heard somebody retell it recently, and I'm like, oh my gosh, his story is kind of my story, and this is why I love his story. So I want to share it with you because it's been really helpful for me. I'll give you like the 60-second version of it. So Joel, he dropped out of college when he was in his late teens, went back to work for his dad, who was a pastor. His dad was a TV preacher, TV pastor. And Joel became the video editor at his dad's church. So he edited his dad's videos to go on to television. And so after he'd been working for him for a number of years, he liked the behind-the-scenes style. He wasn't an extrovert. He didn't like to be up front in front of people. He liked the behind-the-scenes in front of a video, machine. His dad got sick and went into the hospital one week. And his family began to realize that his dad was going to be in the hospital through the upcoming weekend. So he said, hey, Joel, we think you need to preach this weekend in place of your dad. And Joel said, well, I don't preach. I don't do sermons. I do behind-the-scenes. I don't do out front. And then his dad actually called him and said, hey, Joel, you may be putting this together, but like, I'm not gonna be there this weekend. I think you need to preach for me this weekend. Joel said, dad, I don't preach. Like, I've never preached before. I don't have a sermon. And his dad said, hey, here, I'll tell you what, why don't you go into my office and look through my file of sermons and pull one out that you really like and just re-preach it next weekend. It'll be great. So Joel said, okay, goes and looks in his dad's files, spent 2 days looking. 2 days later, he calls his dad back and says, dad, I've been looking through your files for 2 days. I can't find a single sermon that I like that you ever preached that I want to re-preach. And so he eventually just landed on one and he preached it. And it was terrible. I mean, he says it was awful. It was one of the worst, messages ever. And so he went back and went about his normal work that week. Well, his dad ended up passing away that week. For the next weekend, and his family came to him and they said, Joel, we think you need to follow in your dad's footsteps. We think you're the one that needs to preach this weekend and take his job. And he's like, did you see me last weekend? I was terrible. I was awful. I'm not a preacher. I don't do this. But he decided to step in and do it anyway. And so for the next number of months, he tried to preach like his dad. He tried to be his dad. In fact, he said, this is really embarrassing, but I even wore my dad's shoes for a number of months on Sunday mornings, just trying to figure out how to do this thing. And then he said something that's the whole point of the story, and regardless of what you think or know about Joel Osteen, this is why you know about him, because of what he said right here. He was a video editor for 17 years behind the scenes. But then at one point he said this, it dawned on me, I have to run my race. I can't run my daddy's race or any other preacher's race. And he's been running his race ever since, very successfully. For me, I had a friend early on when I started as a pastor that said to me, Kurt, you're not your dad. I mean, your dad's great. He's done some great things, but you're not your dad. You got to figure out what it means to be Kurt Walters. And I've been doing it ever since. Like it or leave it, You know, I got my own vernacular. I got, you know, God's kind of put some unique things on my heart about what, and passions on my heart. I mean, things, I'm not doing it to please my dad or my grandfather, my seminary or college professor, probably rolling in their grave over some of the stuff we do. But it's me running in my lane, doing what I feel like God has put on my heart. And here's why I tell you that story, because you have to learn how to run your race in this high achiever culture. Not somebody else's race, not somebody else's lane. And when you do, you'll become the person that God created you to be. And you're going to do some great things. I believe it. Let's stand. I want to pray for us, and then we're going to sing one more song. Heavenly Father, we thank you for today. We thank you for the opportunity to gather here on this Sunday morning. We're walking in here from all different places in life, all different places in our awareness of you and our lives. And yet, God, we stand somewhat in awe of the fact that you have called us by name according to your purposes. Some of us have been in that relationship with you for a long time. Others of us are still thinking about it. Some of us just began it. God, I pray that you help us to know what to do with what we've heard today. Give us the courage this week, God, to know what it means for me to run a race that you created me to run, and to learn from others around me, to be inspired by others around me, but to not allow myself to drift into their lane, because we believe you have a plan. I just pray you give us the courage this week to follow that and to chase that and to experience it and to allow you to bring us that peace and that tranquility with one hand instead of two. So help us to know what to do this week as we get after it. I pray these things according to your character, Jesus. Amen.